Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by the generous contributions of listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/frogpants and show your love for Film Sack today.
So a magical crown was forged that would allow those of royal blood to command the Golden Army if unchallenged. I am King Balor, leader of the Golden Army. Is there anyone who disputes my right? And in his throne room, no one challenged his word.
But wait, what if someone could challenge him?
You're in love. Have a beer. Yeah. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 383. I'm Scott Johnson, and we are mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Joining me today, Brian, is this a Christmas movie, Dunaway?
You know, I thought about that, and I'm going to go with yes.
All right.
Oh, hi, dearest Del Toro. Please don't start weaving me a story about a one-armed elf king and not reveal what happened to that freaking arm. I mean, was he born that way? Did the humans take it to fill their empty heart holes? Did he lose it in a cookie baking competition up on Keebler Hill? Come on, man. I need details. You can't just drop a bomb like one-armed elf and run away laughing maniacally. Hold on. Was that it? Did he lose it in some mythical high school prank gone wrong? Perhaps he cooked that cherry bomb a little too long before tossing it into the toilet. By the way, I heard that is how Randy lost 40% of his hearing in his right ear.
True story.
Huh? Anywho, just need closure on that arm thing, man. Yours truly, Both Arms Brian.
There you go. I don't know where you come up with these things. Also, with us, Randy, he's the fertility god I would bid on, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian, and welcome to Monster, the Monster Emporium, where we have monsters. Sure, we've got the monster whose name is right in the title of the film, and we brought back all of his friend monsters, but that's not all. We've got little monsters who eat your teeth. We've got big monsters who weirdly have pretty much the same right fist as the first monster, only better, only worse. We have albino monsters and tumor monsters and some sort of forest druid tree form monster, but you better act fast because there's only one of those left. And just when you start to say, this is too much monster, the Monster Emporium, with too many monsters, they stop to feel special and entertaining. We say, screw your familiarity, pretty contempt. Here's a whole damned army of golden monsters. Oh my god, how many monsters do we have to kill? Definitely, we're going to kill Whitey. Yes, we are going to kill Whitey because monsters!
Man.
Do you type your notes 40, in all caps?
Right. Told you. 40% hearing loss. That's why you're getting that.
I literally am wiping spittle off the screen.
Ew. Foul.
That spittle on my screen. That was so loud.
Yeah. By the way, to the guy on Twitter who says he has a blue Yeti microphone he'd like to donate to Randy, just let us know and we'll work it out.
I'll pay for express shipping.
Yeah, we'll get shipping. With us finally, and as always, Brian, this guy is way better in this than he was in that terrible Death Race sequel, Ibit.
Oh, he totally was.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, need a little more volume.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, this is all right.
Yeah.
Mr. Guillermo, the production team is here to talk with you about the creatures you want to create for Hellboy 2.
See?
Ah, yes, send them in. Hello, team.
What's
Why
this
am I Russian?
Voice?
Let's get out of the Russian accent. Switch over to Spanish accent. I practiced this for hours before call today. Yes, send them in. Hello, team. Here are my ideas for the monsters I want in Hellboy 2. First off, do we have a fishman? Good. I need to have fishman in everything. I love fishman. Next, I want to have a goblin market. Lots of goblins and a guy with church on his head. Like a regular head, but I want it to have an ornate church on the top. Next, give me a creepy monster guy with no eyes. I need to have no-eye creepy guy in every movie, too, like Fishman. Okay, good. All right, thanks. Get started.
Mr. Guillermo, I'm taking everyone's lunch order. What would you like, sir?
I want 4 pieces of Wonder Bread. Assemble it with toothpicks to make an open-ended cube. Then I want llama entrails, guts. You know guts? Yes, guts in center. Put in a Whirlpool toaster oven for exactly 3 minutes, and then stick Hershey's chocolate bar in center. Then have it served to me by Fishman. I love Fishman.
So you're saying he's telling you,
I'm telling you, you could watch interviews with him on YouTube and know how he sounds.
Yeah. I know. I seriously, right before the show, watched him get interviewed on Jimmy Kimmel and practiced along with him. And just as soon as I go
Russian.
Into that guttural, it's like right into Russian.
Yeah,
well, the World Cup is on, and I don't know. I don't know if you've turned it on, but there's been a lot of Russians. There's been a lot of Russians.
Yeah, there are many Russians.
I just slip right into Russian whenever I do that growly voice.
Yeah, the Russians are always, they're actually doing very well in the World Cup. But here's the deal. This is a movie I hadn't seen yet because I don't remember why I didn't see it in 2008. Probably because everyone else didn't see it because The Dark Knight pretty much eclipsed anything else that came out that summer.
I saw it.
But, well, it's because you're you. But here's the deal. Yeah. I freaking loved this, and I'm going to let Scott Fletcher explain.
Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. The mythical world starts a rebellion against humanity in order to rule the Earth. So Hellboy and his team must save the world from the rebellious creatures.
Jeez, that's a reductive intro. It's not right. Fletcher's fault. Yeah. But
I wouldn't watch it either if I read that, that synopsis.
Not great. Anyway. Hey, it's Hellboy 2, and I missed this one. But I don't know why, because I really liked the first one, and
I'll tell you. I think you got it right with the 2008 thing. Mm. I think that by the time you've seen Iron Man and WALL-E and The Dark Knight, blah blah blah, like that was a huge year for movies that kind of fit into this space. You know, the action excitement kind of not very mature, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like aimed at older audiences.
Yeah, it's a bummer because, I don't know, I feel like this got overlooked and it shouldn't have. And in fact, they overlooked to the point that the third movie that was always planned, this was supposed to be a trilogy, just never happened and likely never will, at least in that
Not
iteration.
In that
yeah.
Right.
And I remember thinking the first one was kind of lackluster and thought, all right, well, yeah, no need to go in to see number two. I mean, in retrospect, I mean, this was far better than I remember the first one being. I haven't seen the first one in forever. So maybe I'm just remembering other things at the time that completely surpassed it.
But, I like two better. It was more fun.
Oh, way more fun.
Don't get me wrong. I liked one.
The crap out of this.
Yeah.
But two is fun.
I had a blast with it. And I didn't know kind of what to expect. I've seen one a ton of times. So I kind of knew what that was about. But I didn't know what to expect. I'm a huge fan of the comic. I've read them all and love them. And always felt like they had the right tone for the movie. They kind of nailed that stuff pretty well. First movie had its problems, but I felt like, well, we'll see. You know, like, how's the sequel? Obviously, if it was better than, you know, if it was great, then we'd have had a third one by now. And now I see it, I'm like, no, this was pretty good. I don't know what happened there. Bummed me out.
It is great. Like, on Rotten Tomatoes, Hellboy 1 is 81%. Hellboy 2 is 86%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a higher, it was received, you know, critically better. Like, I don't know. I just had a ball with it. It felt like, it felt like somebody said to Del Toro in a probably not Russian accent, probably said, they just said to him, hey, you want to go nuts with your creature effects stuff that you love so much?
Right.
Because he's obviously a huge fan of that stuff, and you got Doug Jones in there, and he'll do whatever you tell him to. He'll put on whatever. I mean, he's like three characters in this.
Yeah. I think you nailed it, Scott, because this is... Okay, so Hellboy 1, Del Toro was kind of eclipsed by the character Hellboy. That's what we're going to see. But we had Pan's Labyrinth between the two, right? So we were actually... We had a more confident Del Toro coming into this.
More confident producers.
Yes.
Like Hellboy 2 was definitely guaranteed. Like as soon as Hellboy 1 opened, they announced Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
But it helped so much that he made Pan's Labyrinth. And that was, Academy Award nominated film and all of this stuff.
Right.
That really, they go right into making Hellboy 2 coming out of that. And it actually kind of feels like Pan's Labyrinth is sort of a middle movie in a trilogy.
Yeah. Almost. It feels like the same universe for sure because of Toro.
Yeah, and the way he does, you know, there's always some creature with eyes in the wrong place, and you know,
or no eyes with a big flat face,
and that flat faced angel of death thing in this one is also Doug Jones. Like that guy's your body. Mm. He's your guy to put in these suits and have him do this stuff. And also, this is the movie that marks them letting him speak with his own voice. And I never understood why they had David Hyde Pierce do the first one or have them do the VO. And it used to drive me.
Fine. It sounds great.
Yeah, it was annoying to me that they did that. Well, I dug around, figured it out. The producers thought for Hellboy 1, because when that came out, Frasier was still a huge deal and David Hyde Pierce was very bankable. They thought that would make the movie a bigger hit if they had his name attached to it. The problem is, when they got done with production, David Hyde Pierce sees this thing and says, I don't feel good having my name in these credits. Not because the movie's not good, but because Doug Jones does all the work here. I don't feel like it was out of deference to Doug Jones. He felt bad about that. He said, I don't want to, so take me out of the credits. So he's nowhere in any of the credits. You only know it because you recognize it, and that's straight up it. So this next time they just let Doug Jones talk, which is, I don't know why they didn't in the first place. Well, I do know why, because they were trying to, they're trying to up the box office.
Capitalize
by
on
name.
The name of, right, exactly.
Right. But Abe Sapien was supposed to get a spinoff. That hasn't happened. They were supposed to do all kinds of things with this franchise.
He kind of has. It's The Shape of Water. Right?
Shape of Water. That's exactly. Exactly. That was his story.
Shape of Water could be the prequel to Hellboy. And he just finally finds his voice and joins the BPRD.
He does like the Fishmen. You're not wrong in your statement at the top of the show. But it's just a delightful thing. I really enjoyed it. It's maybe more than, I don't know.
It's hard not to, even looking at IMDb's photo of Doug Jones, it's hard not to see Fishman, even in his regular clothes.
Oh, yeah. You can't even do it when you watch Star Trek Discovery, which he is fantastic in, by the way. He's my favorite character
really
in that show.
He's really a Fishman. He's just playing a human.
He's basically fish just space Fishman.
I believe that, actually.
Right. That's his natural form, Fishman. Right.
Yeah. He's I just love him. He's like an unsung hero of great things,
one of my favorite things about Star Trek Discovery is Doug Jones.
Oh yeah, he's easily my favorite character on there. Like
I did get a room temperature when we was watching this. I was watching with multiple age groups and people who had really never seen Hellboy, and one of them said, "Is he trying to be like a C-3PO kind of thing?" And I was like, "No,
no,
no,
little, no, maybe a little bit. Okay, no."
So in this film, the actor. The voice is different than the person manipulating the character is Seth MacFarlane as Johann Krauss.
Yeah.
And now at the time, I remember not thinking at all about that voice. But this time watching it with the last 10 years of Seth MacFarlane everywhere and all of his voices, he just returns to these same stock voices so much.
Yeah,
actually kind of annoyed me that I was hearing Seth MacFarlane. Like.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's the only thing that really annoyed me, because I knew it was Seth MacFarlane and he was doing the fish from American Dad.
Right.
True. Well, what's cool is I remember seeing his name in the credits, completely forgot about it, did not know who was doing the voice.
I envy you then.
Because I had forgotten.
That didn't annoy you because you'd forgotten.
Because I completely forgot.
Right.
Yeah.
And
When we get a second season of The Orville, I'm expecting him to use that voice at some point for a joke.
A new German addition to the crew or something.
Yeah. It's I mean, in the comic, that character's in there. It's interesting. Like, they went all in on this. Like, that's one thing I like about it, is it really embraced the comic world in a way that may have even put off some audiences. Like, I could see some people seeing this and going, what? It's like a demon guy with a gun and a flame lady.
Yeah, there was a little bit. I agree. Now, my opening talked about the one-armed elf. That is actually answered in the comic series. But the fact that they just left it hanging, or left me hanging with no, character development, just, we're just going to mention he's a one-armed elf.
Well, isn't that
the reason why he's killing humans? I'm not going to say. Is that going to come up? I'm not going to say. I can't even tell he's missing an arm because both the arms look normal.
Isn't that old Celtic legend stuff, though, right? Like the Baylor and all that.
Did you guys get tired of...
like a stone hand or something like that? Not a stone hand. Go ahead.
Whatever it is.
Did you at all get tired of a lot of the monsters being introduced and then killed? Lot?
I hated that Wink passed, died, because I was...
Oh, Wink with the retractable metal fist.
Retractable, right.
Yeah, so much fun.
Yeah.
Total zipline fist, zipline hand.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Except I don't like that at one point it was cousin it. What's the name of the thing in Adam's Family, the hand? Thing.
Oh, Thing.
Yeah. When it's doing the Thing run back to him instead of being pulled by the cord, it was kind of dumb. But other than that, pretty rad. It felt meaty and cool. There's some really good shots of, like, him doing the retraction in the far foreground or background, right. And then in the foreground you have Elfman, who, as I mentioned in the top of the thing, I don't know if anyone caught this, but he's played by Luke Goss, who was that dude in bad,
yeah,
very impressive looking guy.
He's really awesome in this. He convinced me in this he can act. He was terrible in that Death Race a sequel thing we saw. It was horrible in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the goofy Roger Corman one. It was like the proper direct video, whatever one. And it was bad. And I thought, well, I don't care about this guy at all. He's super cool in this.
Like, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And poor man Cynthia Nixon as the sister.
I was thinking poor man's
poor lady.
Allie McBeal.
So Anna Walton.
Allie McBeal. That's funny you say that.
Yeah.
I can see that. She does kind of like an Allie McBeal kind of thing going on. They have similar
Mrs. Harrison, eyes. Mrs. Harrison Ford.
Yeah, she looks like somebody Harrison Ford might stare at a little bit when she walks by.
But she's a really...
Calista Flockhart is the name. I'm trying to...
I thought she was a really good pick for this because she does have like this almost princess daintiness that you would expect from inbreeding from years and years of inbreeding elves. And, but like, I mean, not in a bad way.
That compliment, I love how that compliment took a 180 halfway through.
Right off the rails.
Yeah.
But she did have a very elfin quality to her. Like you see, I was looking for Guillermo del Toro's voice. I saw interviews with her too. And, without all that makeup, she still has this very elfin quality to her. Like she could pretty much get a job in every Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, Warcraft movie.
I'll tell you, Liv Tyler is just the best elf, though. She really looks like an elf.
She looked pretty elfy to me. Pretty elfy. But so,
except
like
for the cookie crumbs in her belly button.
Oh yeah, that's no good. No,
I've been trying to get these out for years.
Not elf like at all. So wait a minute, though. Brian, you mentioned somebody on TMS yesterday that you really like from Doctor Who. Billy, what's her name?
Oh,
Piper.
Billy Piper.
Oh, yeah.
She'd be a great elf. I think she'd be
She would totally
awesome
be a great elf.
Like a badass elf that would, like, run you through with swords and staves and things, which was one thing this guy had. Like, I really thought the choreography for his, like, training montage where he's, like, just working out in the sewers with his sword and everything, super good. Like, that stuff looked great. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. Visually, this thing totally holds up. There's a mix of digital and practical going on here that looks awesome. I don't know if he was just like given the keys to the kingdom, but that whole scene we keep referring to, the market area, is I'm just gonna say it, and this is gonna be controversial for some, but I think that's like levels better than what we all thought about the cantina scene in Star Wars when we first saw it. You walk in there and you're just like, man, look at the variety of stuff. And Ibbot, with his description of a guy with a church on his head, is not incorrect. That is exactly what they did.
Yeah, this guy with a church on his head. No, and I think it speaks more to just the level of technology and what they're able to do now compared to Star Wars, what they were able to do in 77, than it is for the creativity. Because the cantina scene is, I can't, I can't say.
I mean, it's iconic.
If both of them were created today, right, that one would be better than the other.
Right.
But this one does such a great job with fully realized different creatures that all look like they came from the same world, which is the best part. They don't look like, right, all right, now we've got shoebox head dude, and now we've got, you know, gumball machine head over here, and then
you should really watch, like, if you haven't, now you say watch some YouTube videos. There's I have the special edition DVD,
of course, of you do.
Of course you do.
I popped in the extras last night, and Del Toro likes to he likes the extras, and man, he just outlines everything from their first production meeting, when they don't even have chairs in this room. It's just them and all the production people planning stuff out, and they're all sitting on the floor, and they're just going down, you know, what his vision is and how they're going to execute. And then it breaks down into the actual model building and stuff, and they show a lot of the model building, and it is just freaking outrageous and breakneck speed that they're building these things, and it was just it's amazing.
And I want to point out there's some good storytelling going on here too. It's not just wow, look at this, wow, look at that. GDT is a master of telling a story that goes into these places and continues through them. Mm-hmm. And so for example, like one little trope here that keeps popping up in this film is whatever you do. Yeah, it's my way or his way. Don't do it his way. And then, of course, Hellboy keeps doing it his way and succeeding. That's an important part of that trope, is that we don't want to do it Hellboy's way, but when he decides to punch somebody in the face, he gets what he's after. And that trope is repeated and repeated and repeated, and it comes right into the troll market, and the trope comes up twice in the troll market, mm-hmm, and then carries on. And it's like GDT doesn't just rest on his laurels as a set designer and a character creator and so forth, but there's also story in all of this that works. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's I don't know, he's got a vision that's very distinctly him. There's a point in this thing where the part I really like is the death of these elf people is signified by them being run through with some sort of sword, and then they turn into basically stone, mm-hmm, but they have opted here visually and aesthetically, right, to go for something closer to like limestone or
wax.
Like a wax, yeah, or like it, yeah, like soap almost.
The king,
like,
the father actually turns into a tree, and then the twins, they actually do turn more into stone. So it's an interesting, I don't know what all is backed by that story, but
it's this attention to detail though that I love it about it. Like he'll decide on a color scheme and an aesthetic or whatever, and then he'll lock in and go, okay, this is what we're doing. Like, we're gonna stay here. Shape of Water's like that. It's like we're gonna go with this blue hued, sort of everything's going to be sort of a shade of blue, and we're locking
which
in.
Was great with the blood they show in that.
It's really cool. So I don't really know. I just feel like he's a huge nerd. He loves nerdy stuff. He's into things we are. Like every time you see him saying something on Twitter, I'm like, you're just like the most regular dude I've ever heard.
Right. The interview that I watched has him talking to Jimmy Kimmel about wearing a CPAP and getting this call in the middle of the night to let him know that he'd been nominated for all these Academy Awards for Shape of Water this last year.
He just seems,
and
he's so
like, all right,
easygoing.
This is just a normal dude. But where does, if he were to not have movies, where would all this get funneled out?
Like if he was if he was working down at, I don't know, Applebee's or something, what would
Baskin
he do with
Robbins,
that?
Baskin Robbins. Like, he's bizarre.
Yeah, totally. Like, I feel like he's got the, he's
what
luckily.
What flavor would you like? Now let me tell you what I'm going to give you.
Yeah, it's just a really interesting guy, and he just seems, I don't know, like, I don't want to get too admiration-y. I've learned lately, the last couple of years, don't get too many heroes because something weird will happen. And
yeah,
because
then you'll end up watching this movie and go, can I like Jeffrey Tambor now or not?
Right.
No, you can't. I'll tell you, there was another side of the creativity of this film, which is Danny Elfman. Could not have picked a better, more whimsical composer for the music in this movie. It's just another one of those layers. Like, the film just has it right in all these different places.
Did you find any of that sort of, I mean, I agree, and I love Danny Elfman, so this is kind of not a criticism at all, but if there was one thing about the movie, I definitely felt it was kind of the music seemed a little In a couple of places, just a little Riveted. Overblown. Like, oh, whew, okay, easy. Slow down there, giant. Like, it just seemed, it seemed like they're really into punctuating every possible moment with as much orchestrated Danny Elfman as possible. This For the most part, I liked
this
it.
This is but. Even though I think this was more of a Christmas release, but this felt very summer release to me. It felt, was it a summer release? I can't remember.
This was, I don't remember either. Actually, now
I had it up on.
Because it felt very, it felt like summer, a very summer release.
Yes. July. Yes. It came out a week before Dark Knight. That's a problem.
Yes. Oh, yes. That is a problem. Yeah. But it was very much a summer movie. I mean, while there are things to dig into here, I mean, mostly it's all about blow me away. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to sit in the air conditioning in my theater seat. And I want you to just throw some visual and audio stuff that just makes me go, wow, this is what the theater is all about.
Sure. But also,
see, Scott, Scott, I felt the opposite of you. I was actually put off by the pop music because it felt like I get that it's funny, right? It's funny when suddenly they're playing some
Barry Manilow
sing along. Right.
Yeah. But I it was just like, oh, this isn't the adventure, like high fantasy kind of music that I was just hearing. And it takes me out of that mood that I thought the sweeping sort of loud music was building.
Yeah, that's fair, I guess. I liked it, though.
I don't know. Like, I liked it, too. I felt like it was a good, I mean, they do it a lot, you know, where they have some What'd sort you... of big adventure-y space thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, here comes. Beastie Boys Sabotage. Like
Is it because Guardians has made us? I mean, it's made us so self-aware of that stuff.
Is it better for the Guardians for you, Randy? Is that, or is it just in general? Or do you not like it here?
I think it's a different thing. I think because Guardians of the Galaxy movies have a real film score too. It's just very very little because they use so much pop music. But I'm like that's a point, right? Like, the whole point of the character is being made through that stuff. Whereas, I don't know, just I felt like there was such a wonderful marriage between visuals and music with Danny Elfman in this film, and it just, I just got broke out of it. I like movies where most of the music is a very carefully curated soundtrack. Like, I over the years, I've come to fall back out of love with Garden State, but back when Garden State first came out and it was all of this music that Zach Braff had chosen track for track for every scene, boy, I thought that was good, you know.
I think that it works in some places. Like, I thought, I always hated Garden State as a movie. It's not interesting to me at all, but the soundtrack's amazing. I didn't like the use of this sort of, hey, here's some modern music you all know, inserted into a weird discordant version of a movie you'd normally not hear it in. And for me, that was Star Trek 09 and the newer one where they keep throwing that. In fact, the song Brian was just talking about, they throw Sabotage in there.
Exactly. That was the example I was thinking of,
Don't like that. That's not, it didn't work for me in Star Trek. For whatever reason, I don't like them trying to punk that up.
It worked for me in the theater because it was such a surprise, but by the time I had watched it two or three times, I was kind of like, okay, bad choice.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like for me, it successfully grounds the film. Like, it gives you some little tendril of connection to our world, our life, our, you know, our pop music, our pop culture. And I don't mind that one bit. I kind of like that when they have that connection like that.
Well, nonetheless, it's good stuff. And this movie's really good at, I don't know, creating a, it's a hard thing to do because there's other places where I think Del Toro screws this up. Like, I thought the first Pacific Rim was kind of poop. And the reason I thought it was poop is because while it had some of his veneer on it, it didn't feel like they went all the way. Mm-hmm. And that takes me out of it. It makes me feel like you didn't work hard enough to make this world believable for me. Something like Hellboy and Hellboy 2 in particular, they go so far to create this fantasy that I just buy it because the work is done. You know, like, I'm so into it because it's like, no, you've done all the details. You've really worked hard to make this otherwise kind of ridiculous storyline work. And you made it work because the visuals and the, you know, just how everything feels and looks matches your vision for the story. And it, you know, that's hard to do. I don't think that's an easy thing to pull off.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
And that is that when it comes to bringing monsters to life, which is what he does, and really his purpose in the world is to bring monsters to life, that there is a middle sweet spot for the size of the monster. And Pacific Rim is nothing but huge, gigantic, like bigger than cities size right. monsters. And then there was some in Hellboy that were too small, like the Tooth Fairies, that you can't ever really get a sense of what, like you can get scared when there's lots of them blurring around and around and around and killing people, but you don't have any kind of connection to them because you can't really see them. But in the middle ground where monsters are kind of the same size and shape as humans, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Relatable. You can understand. Right?
There's also this great, the Golden Army fight toward the end was one of those scenes I usually hate in superhero movies of most kinds, even Marvel stuff, because you've got big CGI creatures, and then you got little or relatively smaller hero people jumping from dude to dude and swinging and punching whatever, and they always look stiff and kind of video gamey to me. Here you got, you know, Ron Perlman, big old coat, giant gun off to
that
the side, and tail.
Me.
Like, well, yes,
the
it's an impractical outfit. I know, but it's his uniform. You have to respect the uniform. But when he's jumping around and
you
doing that, I never
want a big giant London fog type jacket when you're jumping between gears. That is a recipe for getting sucked in.
It's the cape.
Dying.
It's the whole cape thing, right? It's the
It is the cape thing.
The mode cape thing.
You're totally right. Except, you know, that's the comic. That's his uniform. That
yeah.
I don't have a problem with it.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, but the point is that none of that was jarring to me. He was jumping between those creatures, and I was like, wow, this looks like he's really jumping between creatures. It doesn't look like some fake Spider-Man looking janky 3D model, you know what I mean? Like, it worked. And I don't know how they did most of that. Like, that was super impressive. And anytime they would cut to a scene where it clearly couldn't be Ron Perlman doing a stunt, I knew that in my heart of hearts, that's not him, it's somebody else. Still just pretty seamless. And maybe that's the makeup and you know red face and horns and you're all good, I don't know, but love that. Like, that stuff didn't take me out of it the way it usually does.
Speaking of Spawn, we have a Spawn movie coming.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
21 years since the Michael Jai White Spawn. And I'm here to tell you, I don't think Jamie Foxx is right for it.
Well,
my opinion.
He's right for it in the sense that that's a big name and that's a big get for them.
Yep.
But, I mean, yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't cast him. You knew who I'd cast. I'd cast
Michael B. Jordan.
No, well, I might, but I'd probably get
that is a good choice.
That Luke Cage guy is pretty great.
Freaking
Mike Coulter. Oh, what a great choice.
Should have done him, but I understand why Jamie Foxx might bring more dollars to your weird.
He brings all the fans to the yard.
Although, I don't know.
My Spawn is better than yours.
Speaking of Mike Coulter, we have a new Luke Cage season.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear it's mediocre.
Shut your mouth. You got to watch.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The review that I saw yesterday or this morning said it's a 16 episode mic drop or 13 episode mic drop or something
really?
Like that. Yeah.
I keep hearing it's paced weird like all the rest of this Marvel stuff they're doing on Netflix right now, that it's all kind of weird pacing and that's the right now the Punisher is the only one that's really the best and blah, blah,
you're all
blah.
You're crazy. Jessica Jones too was a great second season.
Yeah, but you really liked that Iron Fist deal, and most people, that's pretty universally panned. People hate
whatever.
Iron Fist.
I liked it. I stand behind it. I think it was a fun Marvel TV
Look,
show.
Ibbot doesn't like shoes, and any character that flaunts not liking shoes, he's in.
Yeah.
It was very, you know, it was very reminiscent of Arrow season one, the whole Oliver Queen coming back from being on an island for 5 years. Everybody thought he was dead. He comes back. That first season or that, not first season, the only season of Iron Fist kind of reminded me of that. And I kind of enjoyed it. I'm unapologetic about enjoying.
I can't talk about these things because from childhood, Power Man and Iron Fist was my series. This is what I read over and over. I have, you know, I have every Power Man and Iron Fist book and probably read them each 10 times. Like, so I come into Iron Fist and I'm like, I don't even care. I don't care if it's in Spanish. I'm going to love this thing.
Really?
I agree. I grew up with the same reading, and also Cloak and Dagger. I have not watched the series.
Oh, I hear it's great.
I'm hearing good things about it. Yeah,
yeah, I've heard really
also
good things.
Also another big comic I read a lot.
Yeah. That makes me happy to hear that that's
I'm a little worried about, I mean, I know there's so many changes that they had to make, and I'm a little worried about that because I was such a fan. Like, the fact that they were flawed drug addict junkies that got pulled off the streets, and I want to make sure that all that
so
stuff
dark.
Is still, yeah, I mean, they were this close to being, you know, drugged out runaway statistics.
Maybe basically. They do that. Right. I don't know. Do they do
Maybe
that?
Maybe they do. Exactly. Maybe they do.
That'd be cool. By the way, the young Hellboy, the kid Hellboy version of Hellboy at the beginning
was
of the
a
movie.
Woman.
It was a 36-year-old lady.
A woman the whole time.
Really? She did a great job because I was really buying it.
Yeah, no, I was sure there was a kid in there. I thought there was a teenage boy in there, but it's someone named Monty Ribe, something like that.
Oh, Ribe.
36-year-old woman in 2008.
Who Guillermo del Toro is happy to hire. She's been in his other movies.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he's also one of these directors, very loyal to his cast. He ends up using people for a long time for lots of things. Doug Jones is in every damn thing he's ever done, but like he'll do... Ron Perlman and stuff. He's been, I want to say Ron Perlman was in everything from, let's see, maybe just from Hellboy forward, but he was in Pacific Rim, he had a small role, but you know, he keeps showing up in this stuff.
Another thing too I thought was interesting, a little trivia, I did not know this, the Elf King, one-armed Elf King, actually was the father who played the father of Beauty and the Beast character, correct? Isn't that what I read?
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah, so remember Ron Perlman did Beauty and the Beast series back in the day. Yeah, and apparently he was the same actor was the father.
Oh, no way.
In that series, if I remember reading the trivia correctly.
Well, according to the trivia, he was almost played by the by Saruman. What's his name? Christopher Lee almost had that role and backed out last minute. He was
That would have been a good choice, too.
Huh. I'm not going to do it, he'd say.
I just want to ask, would anybody else go along with me in I'm a little tired of Ron Perlman right now?
No. He's all right.
No, because Sons of Anarchy.
Because I just watched Hellboy 2. Like, it's been this weird thing where I feel like I have intersected with Ron Perlman way too much. In general, like he was in Black Ops 3. He was in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He was in Fantastic Beasts, and it's like I'm a little. They have his voice all over Adventure Time.
Yeah,
and it's like I'm kind of tired of Ron Perlman, and this movie gets going, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna let it be Hellboy, but it kept being Ron Perlman, and I was like, I don't know what's going on with this. Why am I hearing this guy all the time?
Why? What happened? Let me think here for a second. What was he in? What was he in Fantastic Beasts? I don't remember him being in that.
He was just a monster.
Oh,
he was a monster.
He was a monster called Narlak.
I don't remember that at all. I mean, one of my favorite things he ever did was kind of hard to tell it was him unless you knew, but in Star Trek Nemesis, he was Tom Hardy's viceroy alien guy that would follow him around and put his hands. He was always putting his hands on his head and giving him like alien power to do weird stuff. I can't remember what the deal with that was, but do you remember him? Kind of weird alien that
I
would hang around?
No.
Yeah, he was awesome in that role. And it was super hidden, though. It's like so much makeup, you'd never know that was Ron Perlman in there.
I'm glad he's getting all this work. Ron Perlman, next step, lose a little weight, and you're going to be... Listen, hold on, let me finish the joke, guys. God.
Okay, great.
Ron Perlman,
lose
a little weight, and you're going to be the star of the Anthony Bourdain biopic, I'm telling you.
Oh, he's got totally got his face. You're not right.
Ron Perlman isn't really... Okay, so the man's just built like he is. Look at his head. Mm-hmm. He has a large head because that's just how he's built. It's not an insult. Mm-hmm. That's just his body structure. I don't think he's really overweight as much as you may think.
Yeah.
I think he's just
like a pit bull.
It was a joke about how Anthony Bourdain was skinny. Good God.
No, we know. We'll get see. It. Look,
we'll see when the emails come in.
There's this Transformers TV miniseries that's like the primal stuff, like back to, you know, the...
Oh yeah,
apes and all that. He plays Optimus Primal in that. That could be cool. But he's doing tons of voice stuff. You're right, like tons of it. But also other things. I can't find him in Fantastic Beasts. What was he in that? I can't. Oh, wait, there it is. Gnarlacc. Yes. What the hell was that? Yes.
He was just a monster. And it's one of those things that's like, I guess he just like, you're making this thing and he's available. He's just available for anything.
He's the smart goblin in the bar. I remember this now because he has his voice, obviously, and also kind of had his face. He's CGI, did motion cap, but it's super cool. Okay, never mind. I like that character. You're crazy.
I'm not saying it's not cool. I just happened to have played Black Ops 3 and so on. Like, it's just this weird, I keep hearing Ron Perlman all everywhere.
All right. Black Ops 3, look at you. I like that. What else? There's some other cool stuff. They had, we talked about the Irish stuff that was kind of the basis for the mythology here. Peter Jackson approached Guillermo del Toro to direct Halo. And even though, I remember this being talked about at the time, even though del Toro considered it, he turned it down so he could direct this sequel. He also turned down, get this list, I Am Legend from 07, One Missed Call from 08, whatever that was, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince in 2009. All of those he skipped, was offered the directing chair, skipped all of it so he could make this sequel.
The big miss was The Hobbit, right? That's the thing that we all know him for.
Right.
Completing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Was he doing that? I can't remember that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Though.
I don't know. How do you guys feel about The Hobbit? When I was growing up, I read The Hobbit first before I went back and read the Lord of the Rings series. So I read The Hobbit first. And I remember seeing the cartoon from the 70s. So I was all about The Hobbit. And it wasn't until later that I really did the Lord of the Rings. So proper. And then when the movie came out, I was like, oh, is this going to be so much better? And I was kind of disappointed.
No, dude, everyone was disappointed. The Hobbit sucked. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit trilogy
in comparison to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I think on its own, I think it's a decent set of films.
So the basic synopsis is that they had GDT on board to do The Hobbit. He comes in and says it's going to be two or three films and does all of this pre-production. And then everybody realizes, oh, no, audiences are going to want The Hobbit to be exactly like The Lord of the Rings and not a GDT movie and other things. You know, there's other conflicts. And so Peter Jackson is just like taking it over. And then they start filming before they've done a real pre-production. Right. So
Hobbit
movies suffer.
That bums me out because I would have really liked his take. And I would have had no problem with a tonal shift from the others. Like, that's how the books are anyway.
Or I Am Legend. Hearing that he was connected to that originally, that would have been really cool to see what he would have done as far as those.
We would have seen much more monsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right. Exactly. They would have had no eyes.
Yeah. The vampires would have had no eyes. They'd open their hands. There'd be little eyeballs in their hands, and
that's right.
It'd be great. It says in the trivia, and I hate this trivia. So this is our poop trivia of the week. Here you go.
Shit.
This is the garbage trivia. And this sounds like somebody would just write this because they think this is what they're hearing. But it says, Seth MacFarlane based the voice of Johann Krauss on the Jeremy Irons character from Die Hard with a Vengeance. Come on.
That sounds right.
I can hear that, though. I mean, it's more of the lilty Christoph Waltz kind of German accent, right? Mm-hmm. It's more like the smiling German accent. I don't know. I mean, I think somebody heard it and said, oh, that sounds like it. I'm with you on that.
But it's this thing he does. Like, it's no different than this thing he does, and it's got no other basis than that's the voice he does when
that's his German accent.
Yeah, that's the fish. It's the fish in the American Dad. It's the same damn voice, and that's fine. Look, Seth MacFarlane, you're a very successful man. I'm not ripping on you, but that German voice is not that great. It's okay.
I was fine. It did not detract or add to.
I like the character a lot. I like the idea of this like old Nazi scientist, formerly Nazi,
vapored, now just a vapor floating around,
control vapor that can just like go control things, and it can even get inside of your locker room.
I don't know.
Room.
Yeah, I think this may speak to how the character does. But I had almost kind of forgotten about that character. Which is funny because when I went back and watched this, I'm like, oh, wow, he's such a big part of this movie. But before I went back and watched it, I had kind of almost forgotten the character.
Oh, that's a good trope, actually. Oh, I'm going to hit this.
weird.
So here, he's one of those guys, like, he's in charge, right? Like, so you're supposed to be following right. that guy and do his bidding or whatever. And, oh, he's such a hard ass. We're never going to be able to get this job done, and we're going to have to do this on our own and sneak out of here. And then he comes up and confronts you and says, hey, you can't do that. And they say, well, we're going to. And he says, but you can't do it because I'm going with you. And then now right. they're all pals. Yeah.
And that's the reason why I don't remember him, because he was neither against them or with them. He was just kind of, here I am. It did provide for some comedy when Hellboy was getting his trash handed to him in the locker room. That was fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Except you take one step to the left and guess what? You're out of reach. All those locker doors.
My trope in there is the nicknaming. So you have characters that are that have unfortunate names, and I guess you decide, oh, other characters wouldn't want to use their names. Maybe that's not true, but you decide that. So now we got, hey, Red, what are you doing? Red, come back here. Red, I'm talking to you. Red. And it's like, this movie's called Hellboy. What are we doing?
Well, Red's an easier way to say than Hellboy. I mean, that's the whole thing, is he hasn't been Hellboy since he was a boy, and they named him Hellboy. But he's like this, now he's a man, right? And he's sitting around smoking cigars. And
a man.
Nobody Hellman. Calls him. He's Hellman.
Yeah, he's Hellman.
And he makes mayonnaise.
Right, Hellman's mayonnaise. Mmm, gross.
Makes the best foods.
According to Ron...
Go ahead.
No. You.
I was going to say, I couldn't focus on any gross spots in this movie. It was just so abstract lots of times.
I couldn't find one either.
I couldn't think of anything gross.
No. There's lots of cool stuff, like guy gets sucked into the grinder because his fist got jammed in there, or...
Yeah.
You know, like,
and how, show it. And how, what a surprise that was. You see that grinder, know, in the opening shots of the Goblin Market. Is there any question that we're about to see someone go through?
Oh, yeah, someone's in the grinder today. Doesn't
Chekhov's
matter.
Wood chipper right there. Right.
That's your friend back there in the wood chipper. But yeah, like I wrote here, gross. There, I always write a little header that says gross, and then I have it next to it text that says can't think of one. I don't know. I was fine with everything. Nothing was gross.
No, I mean, there was the obvious toothbrush. In the cat food, the toothbrush and the cat food, but we didn't even talk about Selma Blair.
One of the best
Blair.
Cat foods, though.
Yeah,
like, I mean, really, gonna, really good.
Yeah,
you
it's great.
With a cat food, I mean,
yeah,
that is one of the better ones to use.
Right. Have we really talked about Selma Blair? Because I love the character, Ms. Sherman, but
she's great.
Really get enough of her to really.
I don't think near enough.
She was kind of one dimensional, right?
Well, and she's a lot of what she's there for is the romance strife that she and Hellboy are going through, and the whole like I need some time and I'm pregnant and da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. If there was one saving grace for no Hellboy 3, it's that we wouldn't have gotten the
Hell baby
the trope of the Shrek 3 trope of the third one they have children.
But didn't they have part 3? When did Little Nicky came out? When is that? Was that
Is that Hellboy 3?
I think it was before this though.
Well, in Hellboy the comic, he's got kids. And
yeah,
like they're following that story and they're twins. Yeah. And they're wicked cool in the comic. It doesn't mean they would have done that right in the movie, but maybe they would have. I mean, like I trust him with this material and I'm bummed they didn't do it. Ron Perlman's on record as saying that the entire unmade sequel of this film was going to be all about Hellboy becoming the beast of the apocalypse. All this foreshadowing in the first two films would have finally gotten to, had some fruition there. But then he would have come to terms to meet with his destined fate, this according to the trivia, by defending humanity as opposed to wiping out all of mankind as he is meant to do. Hellboy's twin kids were going to bear resemblances to Hellboy and Liz, respectively. One of the twins was going to be corrupted and the other was going to be angelic. So there's stuff there. You could have done something.
And I love Selma Blair. I would love to see this film focus more on Liz Sherman, develop her more. I'd love to see a movie that was based around that character. She
wouldn't want that attention.
Yeah.
She is a slightly older generation Aubrey Plaza. And like, I can't get enough of that take on a character.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. That's hard for me to take Aubrey Plaza seriously. Like when she's in,
I hope not, because she's great.
She's like great. That. I like her a lot. Don't get me wrong, but she is kind of that same. I watched Dirty Grandpa. That movie sucks, by the way. Don't ever see it. It's terrible. The De Niro thing and Zac Efron. But
I
anyway.
Kind of enjoyed the Goes West. It's not Aubrey Goes West, but it's like that. I think it's a Netflix original.
Oh, maybe I haven't seen that. I don't know what that is.
Like a fictional thing or a
yeah,
non-fiction?
It's a fictional. She plays a a person who is obsessed with an Instagram star, and she wants to be a part of that life. And what is it? It's not Aubrey Goes West.
That sounds awful. I don't want anything to do with this Instagram.
It was. I thought so too. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this, but I'm a big fan of Aubrey Plaza, and I'm like, let me take a little peek.
Ingrid Goes West.
Ingrid Goes West.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of it.
I didn't.
She's great on Legion, I think, and she does a great job.
Oh, she's fantastic
with
on there. She's fantastic on there. But that's her two modes. It's that or the. Yeah, go ahead.
I really enjoyed Dirty Grandpa's what he had to say on the Tonys last week. But I'm curious about Scott. I'm curious, Scott. Why didn't you like the movie?
Oh, this movie's awful. It's just a bad. It's a bad comedy. It thinks being raunchy and gross is all you need, and you need more than that. I don't have a problem with a raunchy, gross movie if it's also funny. It's not funny. It's just bad, dumb. I wasted that. That was a waste of time. And I think critics agree with me. It's not well received. People do not like that movie. I just thought, well, all right, I'll check it out. I like old Robert De Niro. That's kind of funny. Let's see how this little road trip with his grandson goes. Ha ha, ho ho. Nope, it's not funny. There's no ho hos anywhere.
I'll tell you what, no though, man. Zac Efron can wear a sweater.
Oh, he's a good-looking dude. Yeah. And I actually kind of like him generally. I think he gets a good bad rap because of the High School Musical stuff and all that, but he's fine. And in this one, it's also part of the joke that, ooh, an edgy movie with Zac Efron in it where he has to be edgy and he spends half of it naked and drunk because someone gave him cocaine. And ha ha, ho ho. Like, I don't know. It bummed me out. That movie's not great.
I really enjoyed The Greatest Showman. I loved his performance in that. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I thought he was good in that Seth Rogen Neighbors thing.
Oh, I never saw Neighbors.
A little different role, yeah.
Yeah, a very different role, but yeah, but still, you know, for me, broke out of that whole, like, all right, good he's guy. Teen, pop, heartthrob. Yeah.
You know how Bridesmaids is funny, or you know how the Vegas one with all the guys in
Hangover.
The Hangover's funny. This is like trying to be those things and is not funny. But it's trying to be that. It wants to be this. Right. Hey, it's the reinvention
An
of the raunchy
style.
Comedy. Sure. It's not. Yeah. It's bad. And De Niro should be embarrassed by that movie.
Yeah.
He's If Meet the Fockers has told us anything, it's that he's impervious to.
He's happy to do this stuff, and I get it. I mean, we just saw him in Heat, and he's amazing in that. But the days where there's some heavy De Niro, we've lost it until this Scorsese thing comes out, and then maybe we'll get it back. Anyway, I got a question for you guys. This is a serious question. Is this? Now, I'm not trying to. You know, this may be a question about the entire comic, everything about Hellboy. Is this just Ghostbusters, really, at the end of the day?
I actually got that vibe a couple of times because you have this, I mean, it's part of the comic, but the way it's portrayed in the film, it feels a little Ghostbusters because you're working with the paranormal investigation team, right?
Yeah. There's somebody telling the press that everything, it's just a gas leak, but meanwhile you got Egon and up there with his sensors trying to. Like, I always got that vibe. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's a template a little bit.
I did not make that connection, but I totally see it.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, they got their own little trash. They got their truck, trash truck vehicle modernized. So, I mean, there's definitely parallels there.
Oh, my gosh. Brian.
Paranormal parallels.
Ibbot doing that sound of the siren is brought me back entirely. That's amazing. That's crazy how that sound just put me in. You just put me in Ghostbusters.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I think Mike Mignola would cop to it. I think the point of Hellboy, once he expanded it beyond this one weird character, is that it is like Ghostbusters, only the ghosts are the busters too. Like that.
Yeah. That's
I don't think he really. Yeah. I don't think he tries to hide the influence.
Yeah, I agree. He's, by the way, if you haven't paid attention to him lately, he's done some other projects. That guy, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most all-time interesting styles in the history of comic books. There's nobody like him.
Yeah.
And but there's a few that try to be like him, and they fail. But he is just something else, that guy.
He's just got such a unique style.
Yeah, I love it. I also wrote down that Hellboy is more Superman than Superman, and I'll tell you why. I am always annoyed with how DC has handled Superman. They've turned him into a a guy who just sort of stands there going, well, I don't know what I want to do.
I'm having a crisis.
My dad says I shouldn't have saved the kid in the bus, which is something Pa Kent would never do. Like, all these issues I have with Superman. I love the actor, but I think he's given the wrong material. Anyway, right. I think Hellboy, once again, proving that he, among all these new Marvel heroes, like in the most recent Marvel film, the Infinity War, there was a scene where they're coming out of Strange's building, and Tony Stark's first thought is to help that lady and to get emergency services there and then go fight the big bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point in here where, I mean, it gets a little ridiculous what he does with the baby, but Hellboy wants to save that baby first. He understands the job of a hero. The job of a hero is to save those who can't help themselves. And I love that. And I wish Superman would remember that you're supposed to be the original version of that, not some emo turd who gets all wet in his dress clothes in the tub with Amy Adams. Let's not be doing that.
Whoa!
Anyway.
Is that a euphemism, all wet in his dress clothes?
Wow.
Well, didn't he do that? He climbed in the tub and he was like, I don't remember very well.
Amy Adams is an American treasure.
Oh, I love
her.
She's
a treasure.
I love her. There's nothing wrong with her. She's a fine Lois Lane. This, the story and stuff they give him are bad. They've blown that. They've ruined it because you had the perfect casting. Henry Cavill's perfect. He's a great Superman. Mm. Make him truly okay. Superman. Don't make him shitty. And don't
much
see...
Much better than Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and don't see... Don't
where
CGI.
Were they going with that?
Yeah, I really want to see some of that footage. Didn't they have that leak? Too. Some of that leak.
They
right?
had a leak of like him with the suit, trying on the suit and like flexing.
Look,
basically.
I'm saying it would have been an absolute disaster, and I would have loved to have seen it. I would have loved to have seen that disaster. Bring
we
it
would
on.
Have seen it here on FilmSite, no doubt. Oh, that's where we would be seeing it.
Yeah. This movie also felt a little like Time Bandits for me, but this is just me because I think back to Time Bandits. I think of crazy creature design and worlds that you could come crashing through, and there was a mirage that seemed like there's just desert, but if you broke through, it was a whole different world. And you know, this weird, like, again, they don't have to explain it, but this big stone statue rises from the sand and has a door in its gut, and now you're suddenly in a whole new place. Like, I different, love that kind of stuff.
Different dimension,
yeah. So cool. Mm-hmm. Attention to detail, man. That's what I like.
Yeah, a fully realized world like that.
Yep. It's really good. And then, you know, Barry Manilow. That caps off things nicely.
Right. Yeah, speaking of those 80s movies that I feel like probably inspire or at least touch and influence Del Toro, I feel like Gremlins, because I felt like the when he brought those two boxes at the very beginning, the elf son.
Yeah.
He brought those two boxes, and it's like, oh yeah, I picked these up today. And I'm like, oh, what'd you get? Did you go down and get some Mogwai? What's in there? Don't feed them after midnight. What you got in there? And just those little touches, it felt like I'm with you guys. There's so many 80s movies influences that seem to touch.
Okay,
little bits of
okay. Yeah. I want to go around the table, and I want you to answer the question. Do not shirk this question, guys.
Okay.
Including the BPRD, everything in the film. I want you to pick the one creature, character, the one thing that you were the most entertained by and would like to like investigate more. Like if I was going to say, here's a coffee table book and it's got pictures of this thing and details and so on. What is it? What's the one thing?
Oh, well, Churchhead.
Churchhead would be great. Yeah, that's a good one.
I got one.
I think I've already expressed mine.
What's
which
yours?
Is I want to know more about the Elf King. I mean, he is such a fascinating character. I mean, in the beginning, he's lost his arm. We don't really talk about it. I know it's part of the mythos, but I'm interested in where they were going to it with this, because he's also near the end. He's just like, he's all just laid out on his chair, you know, just kind of like, I'm just going to rest on my laurels now.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see where he's been.
Yeah.
What happened.
This guy's interesting. And he looked very much the part of like, you know, a druid. As he's gotten older, his head's turned into antlers, basically. Like,
yeah.
You could have told me he was the exact same villain from, like, Blade, and I would have believed you, though. Like,
this had feelings of Blade, too.
It had a very generic, you know, blonde, cocky...
Right. Oh, you mean the bad guy, not the dad.
The Elf King.
He's not the king.
Not the king.
The elf prince.
I'm sorry. The elf prince.
Right.
I like the elf king.
Yeah, but Dunaway, you're talking about the guy in the chair. You're talking about the king.
Yeah. I'll kick back, laying in the chair a little bit low, just a little bit too low, a little too comfortable in that chair.
Okay. Yes.
No one wants to sit in that throne chair because he's had a lot of gas.
Oh, he's probably part of
not
the chair.
Not as much as German. Right. Fart face, like all the what's the little steam things coming out of his helmet there? Is that pieces of him?
It's a question. Yeah,
that's spirit is farts.
It has to be byproduct, right?
Excess gas farts. I don't know.
Right.
I kind of want to like a replica of that suit and just hang it somewhere.
Yes,
it's really cool. Yeah. I love that steampunky really stuff. Cool.
Scott, you had one though.
My favorite thing. Oh, I do want to. By the way, a quick nod to those goggle things that he made for everyone so they could see the truth of things.
They are so cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I would kill to have one of those hanging on the
wall. So many things in this movie I would love to 3D print. Yeah. I want a 3D print church head though.
Yeah, totally do church head. For me it's the guy, he wasn't on there very long, but he was kind of the groveling chancellor guy that was met up with the son and said, you know, you need to come with me. It was one of those weird aliens. It may even have been Doug Jones again, I don't know, but he had eyes way up in the corners, like the prince. No,
oh yes,
you're on a great character. Something about him. He was very. Who's the guy in the sixth Star Wars movie that helps Jabba? What's his name?
Bib Fortuna.
Bib Fortuna is what he reminded me of in terms of his attitude. Yeah. It's like groveling. Come this way. You have to talk to the king. He's like the king's representative or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that whatever the hell is going on there. Was really cool. I like that guy's face.
I did like the regret of the goblin who made the Golden Army. What's the goblin?
The little guy with the roly troll. Yeah,
the roly troll.
The troll that puts the roll in troll.
You can't put the ol in troll without that guy. No, he was interesting for sure. Right. He's also another one of these. He's in every Del Toro movie ever. He's just always
now, Randy,
makeup on.
You started the question, but did you ever tell us
the bean that grows into a tree?
That was really cool.
I was taken by this ridiculous trope that I know I'm supposed to hate, where you have the last of the thing and you have to kill it, and then it becomes a wonderful Christmas tree explosion of snowflakes and everybody. I know I'm supposed to hate that, but I was freaking crying.
Wonderful. This is, you're summing up why I think the movie works so well. It does things like that normally, I don't know, they just something, they earn it somehow. It's hard to explain why that stuff works, because normally I'm like, okay, whatever, dude, like, we get it, it's the last one, like, there's probably even other examples I could think of, but that is why I think I like the movie, is all of that stuff. There's plenty of moments like that where you're like, this should not work well, and it totally works. Right. They pull
and
it
there's
off.
There's a lot of really good writing in there, too. I mean, you don't know. When he pulls out that little glob, I mean, you're all like, oh, this is going to be stupid. But then the princess's reaction, the actress, brings it home to such life. It's like, oh, no, what's it going to happen here? Because she's, like, really freaking out. She's got me worried now.
Yeah.
And it did not disappoint.
No.
I thought it was really
good. It's really good.
Yeah.
We should play some clips. I have a number of them.
Yes, please.
Yeah. I have a few here. They're all lovely and wonderful. Let's play this one. This is Luke Goss. He is, again, the main bad dude here.
Frankenstein. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's wait, was he Frankenstein in that movie? What did he play? What was his character?
Wasn't he Frankenstein in...
No, he wasn't. He wasn't Frankenstein. He was. What's his name?
What was the
Death Race?
It was.
He was the other guy.
You got to remember, this is the more like straight up Death Race, non Frankenstein Death Race. This is like the escape.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
He was main character though. I mean, he was.
Yeah, he was
definitely a main character.
Yeah, he was your main driver. He was. He was basically the guy. Well, we can't get Jason Statham back for this sequel, so let's have that guy.
Was it Carl Lucas? Is that
whatever it was?
Yes.
But he's your replacement. Jason Statham. That's his job.
Yeah.
But here he is in great makeup and I think way better style and awesome stuff. So here he is.
Who are you, sir? Sir, please identify yourself. You can't just...
I am Prince Nuwad, Silver Lance, son of King Balor. And I am here, sir,
to reclaim what is rightfully mine.
I think he was cool. He oozed cool. Mm-hmm. I liked him a lot in this. Here's Abe Sapien and George Bluth.
I suppress each photo. Cell phone videos. They cost me a fortune, and they show up on YouTube. God, I hate YouTube.
He just wants the world outside to know what we do. Mm-hmm. What he does.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about George Bluth right now, but it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Hey, he's no... Well, anyway, I'm not going to say that. All right. Hey, moving on. How about this? This is what we all do this.
All these things do is eat and eat, then poop, and then eat again.
I love Abe Sapien as a character. I would be 100% cool with a spinoff or a TV show or whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, a Hellboy TV show would be really cool. And everyone keeps talking about that guy from Stranger Things as the new Hellboy, but I don't know what project's being worked on. Is this some kind of official thing? Does anyone know about this? Hold on. Hellboy. What's that guy's name? In 2019, there's a new Hellboy coming out. This is directed by Neil Marshall. It is Mila Jovovich, David Harbour is who I'm thinking of. David Harbour is your new Hellboy. You got your, let's see, do they even have an Abe Sapien in this one? Anyway, this is happening. We're getting a new Hellboy in 2019.
All right.
So
I'll take it.
Wish it was animated, to be honest, but whatever.
That would be cool.
Yeah. There are a couple of
Mignola style art.
Yeah. There are a couple of direct to DVD animated things, but they're not great. They're okay.
Right.
Story wise,
there's never been
really
good video game yet either. I mean, not.
No, but now would be the time, right? The kind of 2D cool 2.5D stuff you can do with cell animation in video games now.
You can tell such great big stories now.
Or even having the style that that new Spider-Man Spider-Verse thing is going to be. Combo 2D offset printing 3D looking.
Sony movie.
The Sony thing, the animated movie.
Yeah, that looks so cool. Oh my gosh, you guys, I'm so excited for that. I hope that's not bad. I want that to be great. Here's what? Oh, I like this line.
I'm not a baby, I'm a tumor.
Then he ducked his head. It was so funny.
The way they did it was so like out of nowhere, and then they just left it. I really like that. I don't know why, but again, stuff that shouldn't work. That should have been dumb, but it worked. Here's Doug Jones, and he's good.
Abraham Sapien.
No. There is no such name.
Oh, I don't like it either, but I...
Enough.
I love him. I love him. He'll spend 6 hours under makeup chair just for us every time.
I believe it, yeah.
All right, here's a cool roar from that plant god that Randy likes.
Oh, yeah.
Here you go. You know what he's really good at is sound design, too. The sound stuff in his movies. Mm-hmm. Really great. Here's that word.
You will learn to obey me, follow protocol, and stay focused at all times.
That word, focused? Right. Yeah, with your accent, I wouldn't use it that much.
I don't even know what that word is.
Focused.
Oh.
Yeah, but it sounds like something else. Yeah.
Yeah, but just, you know, okay, I get the joke. PG-13, you get your half swear word in there for a PG-13. Also, I would love to see an R-rated cut of this. For whatever reason, I just feel like they're holding back just a little bit. You know, just a little bit. This is all right.
Your royal assness.
Royal assness, that's a line. Let's see. Angel of Death is cool.
So child, make the choice. The world, I am.
So that is apparently what they do. They have Doug Jones go in and do like this kind of talk for the first run. And then they do a low version, and then they do this cool crossover, which is pretty rad. But I would love to hear him just going, just make the choice.
I want that isolated. Him doing the Monty Python spam voice.
Yeah. All right, here's the Shiny.
Shiny.
All right, that guy. And then I don't know what this is.
You're in love.
Oh, never mind. That's Fletcher.
What was that?
That's Scott Fletcher. I'm at the end of my list. That's it, everybody. Check this out.
Oh,
It's the Film Sack checklist. It goes like this. George Lucas called and says, no fair, you made a better cantina than I did. Check. Yeah. Doug Jones is an international treasure. Check. And finally, we were robbed of a third movie and an Abe Sapien spinoff. Check. Trek connections are numerous and probably obvious. Not that numerous, but there's a few big ones here. Seth MacFarlane, he was Johan or how you say it.
I was really hoping at this moment you would say Seth MacFarlane was in Hellboy and he's also the star of the Orville.
No, incorrect. Yeah.
Because the Orville is Star Trek, man.
I agree. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, he was on Enterprise though. He played Rivers in the episode The Forgotten and Affliction. Ron Perlman, he was Hellboy, obviously. He played Reman Viceroy in Star Trek Nemesis, as I mentioned before. Fantastic role. And then Doug Jones, Abe Sapien, Chamberlain, and Angel of Death. Oh, he was the Chamberlain then. All right. In Discovery, he played Commander Saru, or is playing Commander Saru in Discovery's...
I'm Commander on Discovery, Saru.
He's the Starfleet officer guy, and he's awesome in that. He is the star of that show, as far as I'm concerned.
He totally is.
Yeah, I love him in it.
You'll get my money back, CBS, when that show comes back, sooner.
Not a minute sooner.
That's all you got. Oh, come on. Just sell yourself to Netflix and be done with it. Just do it.
Do they not have there's nothing they have that you're dying to have.
Let's look at the CBS is all they're doing is they're trying to increase their value so they can sell off. I mean, they know they can't maintain themselves in an individual in that way.
Well, they're already owned by a huge, I mean, CBS is owned by who? Hold on. CBS
Universal, right?
S is owned.
Which Universal is NBC?
No, you're right. I'm sorry. So Paramount is what I meant to say.
Paramount owns them? Well, Viacom owns them, but I guess Viacom owns
Disney. So CBS is a Disney corporation.
No. ABC is a Disney.
ABC was...
Yeah, ABC is Disney. ABC is owned by Disney, yeah. So Disney owns ABC. My point is, no, I don't think this is a thing to get bought off. I think what they're trying to do is like, oh, shit, streaming world is happening and we are late to this game. How do we make value there?
We have one great property. Let's do it.
I feel like part of this, so Ibbot, you know, unsubscribed, as he said, and I think a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing a ton of people are just in there and forget about it, and they're like, well,
lazy, forgot. Yeah,
$7.50 a month, who cares?
They're probably banking on that.
Yeah,
absolutely,
most of these services do. Anyway, there's that. And what else? The Twitter post. Hey, this is where you guys sum it up in a 280 character tweet or less, which is fantastic. Let's start with Randy.
Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, a fun romp through crazy sets filled with people all dressed up in fetish gear and someone just got pregnant, just like Saturday Night at Ibbot's house.
I love this return to Saturday Night at Ibbot's
house. I know. I feel like I really missed out on Saturday Nights at Ibbot's house.
Definitely.
I feel like I'm missing out on Saturday Nights at Ibbot's house.
Yeah.
Right.
Periscoping next time. It'll be good.
No. Interesting.
It's a reference to an old Periscope Brian did that no longer exists. Anyway, let's go with Brian Dunaway.
Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. Ted Danson would have made a really great Hellboy. A challenge must be met.
What? Ted Danson?
I don't know. When I was watching, I was like, for some reason, I've been watching a lot of Cheers, and I was just like, man, I would have really liked to have seen a Ted Danson in his prime Hellboy. I think that he would have been, he's got that head for it, and kind of got, I don't know. It just feels like it would be something that I would
that
like.
That might have worked, sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, I'm actually kind of seeing where you're coming from there. I don't know. Yeah, his voice isn't there, but his,
but he would be face. He would be so Ted Danson, you know, and kind of so confident yet kind of smarmy and a little bit. I don't know. It just hit me for some reason while I was watching it, and all I could do is just keep thinking about it.
He should do it now that he's in his.
What would Ted Danson say here?
Now that he's in his 60s.
How would he do it?
He should do it now that he's in his 60s. I think that'd be great.
Right. He still could.
He's the coolest in now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely he's in the coolest phase.
I like him a lot right now. All right. So there's that. And then finally, Brian Ibbot.
Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, a movie that will make it easier for you to tell the difference between shit and Mignola. If you think about it, it's a compliment.
It's a compliment.
If you think about it.
It's reversed.
Well, I don't want you to assume that I'm not saying Mignola shit. I'm saying exactly the opposite.
Opposite of shit. What is the opposite of shit? Probably food. Right?
Shinola. This is established.
An enema is the opposite of shit.
No.
It's like, you can't say like the opposite of black is white because they're both colors. The opposite of black is toothpaste, right? It's like something completely.
Right. But we have established, like, for 100 years that the opposite of shit is Shinola. That is that's just a fact.
Oh, all right. Well, this has already been determined then. All right. Well done and good job. Look at this. The suspense is over. We finally found out what the movies were almost called. There were two options. It was almost called Help Boy, because he helps people, see? Or Hell Ploy. Hell Ploy. I don't know. It just seemed like a thing to do there. Hey, emails. We got one from Adam from Ysplante, Michigan, or how do you say it? YP.
Oh, Ypsilanti.
Ypsilanti. Is that how you say it?
Okay. Wow. You are Ypsilanti. Not even close.
Ypsilanti.
Really? Isn't it?
No, no, not you.
Me.
Scott.
He means me. Oh. Yeah. I'm bad. You're good.
I'm not calling you out, Ibbit.
He says, this filmsack@gmail.com, by the way, says, hey, Sackers, thought I would mention a couple of things about the famous Heat restaurant in that scene between De Niro and Pacino. Because only two camera angles were used in the final cut of the film, two of the other two over the shoulder angles, long running speculation was De Niro and Pacino were never in the scene together. They chose to film their parts independently. This was proven false in a recent 4K screening from 2016. The actors confirmed they were together. They chose not to rehearse the scene because there wasn't much movement needed, and they wanted the scene to happen as organically as possible. A third camera was on set to do profiles, but it was never used in the final cut. Love the show, Adam. So there you go. They were in it. And this 4K cut, that must be something. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Oh, yeah. I just love a dude. All over Southern California, there are these diners that are so iconic. It's so fun to just go driving and just like leave the highway, drive off into a neighborhood somewhere in LA until you find this diner, and they're just everywhere. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, we should go there. Let's all go now. Ready?
You should go.
Go. There's your email. You can send your emails to filmsack@gmail.com, and you're welcome to. Please do. If you would rather do it on the website, filmsack.com not only has a place for you to leave comments about the film, but you can also click the contact link at the top of the page and send your messages that way. That is 100% fine as well. Our next movie will be one of the Tremor movies. Which one?
Tremors 5. Tremors 5. It's okay. Got the number 5.
Okay.
The Tremoring.
What do we know about Tremors 5 other than that it's a fifth one? Do we know
so
anything?
this is the beginning of a reboot, where they you have Jamie Kennedy, and some other people, and a director who I don't recognize. Well, you know, like do you recognize names like Lawrence Joffe, Ernest Needlove? I don't know.
No, but I see Gross is back. Michael Gross is in there again.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. He's been in all of them.
Yeah. Is Reba McEntire back?
No.
The main thing is, this is a film directed by the director of. Listen, this is the director of Kindergarten Cop 2. Okay?
Oh Lord,
that was
Burt Reynolds, right?
What?
No, Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, I'm thinking about Kindergarten Cop, which I thought was part two.
Oh, right. Me too. Sorry, so am I. That's what I was thinking. It was the Arnold movie. Is what I was thinking of.
Right.
The Schwarzenegger movie. So yeah.
It was Cop and a Half. I'm sorry, Cop and a Half. That's
Cop and a Half was the Burt Reynolds. Yeah.
And just so you know, guys, Kindergarten Cop 2 is streaming on Netflix. I'm just saying.
Nah, the tumor. It's a baby.
Oh, in 2, it turns out to be a tumor.
Right. Damn, it was a tumor.
It is a tumor, he says. I don't know if I want to see that ever in my life. I may I would boycott that shit. But I am in for Tremors 5 Bloodlines. That's the subtitle of it. And I assume the effects are better these days. Probably better worm effects. I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't seen any of these. Dunaway owns all this shit, right?
He's got the deluxe box set Blu-ray edition with,
of course,
deleted scenes.
You fooled, and it comes in it's a collectible, so it comes in one of the graboids. It's actually inside a graboid.
Did you say
reproduction?
Did you say you fools? Did I hear you say
you fools?
Fools.
I just don't want to run past that because I've never heard anyone say that.
Please do that in a German accent next time, though. Fake German accent.
You fools. We will take you down. Hey, there's a movie in 2015 we should put on the list because it sounds terrible. It's called Sand or The Sand, and it's where the sand becomes sentient and kills everybody, so everything's like quicksand.
Wait. I've seen. Is that the one where the teenagers are on the beach?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's the
same. Actually terrible. Is good. It's terrible, but it's good.
Is it Terra good? Because
it's Terra. I didn't want to go Terra good, but it is. I did see that movie, and it's one of those things. It's Miss B. It's Saturday afternoon. I'm like, okay, time to do some projects, and it's like, let's turn something on. Sand is bad. Let's watch this. And I didn't mean to, but I stopped cleaning and I sit down and watched it.
Oh, really? All right.
It was, I didn't expect to actually enjoy it, but it was stupid, but kind of good.
It says here, after an all-night party, hungover revelers awaken to a beating sun and a carnivorous beach that devours anything with a heartbeat.
And it's very much like Tremors in the fact that, you know, you have to avoid making noise and hitting the ground and touching the ground, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm in. Whatever it takes.
Just wash your feet before you get in my car. That's all I
It's also a movie in 2010 called Mongolian Death Worm, but we can probably avoid that.
All right. I didn't see that.
I did see
Lair of the White Witch. Does that count?
Nope. No worms in that.
Lair of the White Witch. I think I've seen that. That was like 80s with Richard Grant, right? Richard E. Grant?
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Thomas Dolby did the soundtrack of that.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, such a weird movie.
What is
That's
it?
That's the only reason I watched it.
Is it a horror movie, or what are we talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gothic horror movie.
Okay. Well, you had me at horror movie. watch for our next episode. No, so we're actually off next week, just to give people a heads up here. That's summer business happening, and we're not going to be here, but we'll be here the following week with Tremors 5 Bloodlines. So come on back and check us out then. Filmsack.com is the website. You can go check that out. Leave your comments, hang out, find all the stuff you need right there. And what else? Filmsack@gmail.com on Twitter. We're at Filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll see you next time.
Aw, hell, boy.
I see what you did. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Ah, shiny.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.